So about 60 years ago, the Frisbee was invented. How about that, huh? 60 years. How many people here remember when the Frisbee was invented? You remember that, when that went on? You remember this? It was named for a baking company, the Frisbee Pie Baking Company. And college students in New England, although the Frisbee was around as a disc, and it was originally named the Pluto Platter, and it was in recognition of the Roswell space incident, and they thought they'd named the disc as a flying saucer. So they named it the Pluto Platter. Well, this sort of caught on here and there, and over in New England, college students were fond of just throwing discs like this when they had them, but more often, they had leftover pie plates. And so they would toss pie plates around, and the name stuck. That with Frisbee pie plates, and so the nickname for the flying disc was the Frisbee. And later, Whammo, who bought the trademark, really liked the Pluto Platter, but went with Frisbee and trademarked that because of the very catchy and popular name. So next time you play with a Frisbee, just think, this really could be a pie plate of something really good to eat, but instead, we toss them. You know, every game has rules. Baseball, football, basketball. Like, how many yards in order to get a first down in football?
10.
So you'd say, I remember the cheer, Melissa makes fun of me, I was in the marching band, not the cheerleaders, right, and the marching band. But our marching band was taught all the cheers so that we could support the cheerleaders when the team was out on the field. You know, so I remember still, first and 10, do it again, first and 10, do it again. And what if somebody started to yell, first and 8, do it great, first and 8, do it great. You just wouldn't be able to do that because that's just not the rules of the game. It's not 8 yards in a first down, it's 10 yards in a first down. And so there's certain rules that everybody gets. And in all the rules that we have, from football to basketball to golf, to all sorts of rules. Think about the Olympics, all the different competitive sports. There's something that all the sports have in common in addition to having a set of rules. What is that? It's a referee. Every sport, every national sport, every Olympic sport, from swimming to shooting the rifle to just doing the skiing, all of them have referees. We remember recently, a very heated argument around the tennis court in women's tennis, and it was all around the referee and the interchange that the players had with the referee and how everything depended upon the referee calling something in or out. So every sport, by definition, is a sport, a competitive sport. It has to have rules, but it has to have a referee. Well, did you know that Frisbee, the game Frisbee, ultimate Frisbee, as I was trying to describe to the kids, it's sort of a mashup between soccer and football and tennis. It's a very complicated game. It's beautiful to watch. And when they catch the Frisbee, they catch it in certain ways to get a certain number of points. But uniquely, if the Olympic Committee approves ultimate Frisbee to be in the next iteration of the Summer Olympic Games, it'll be the newest sport approved by the Olympics, it'll be the only sport without a referee. Frisbee, uniquely, when played, the ultimate game, there is no external referee. All the players govern themselves. So that if you hit a Frisbee and it goes out of bounds, you call it out of bounds. And if there's any kind of a difference of opinion, the players get together and they just decide together, oh, that's out of bounds, you're right, absolutely, let's keep going. And if you happen to bump into another player or you have some sort of a move that breaks the rules, and there are many, many rules in Ultimate Frisbee, then you call yourself out. And if you call yourself out a certain number of times, you put yourself on the sidelines during the game. And that all of the rules inside Ultimate Frisbee are all so internalized by the players, they call it the spirit of the game. And so when you want to check another player, like Marty, catch this. And if Marty didn't catch it just right, and Marty would say, I don't know about that, I might remind Marty and say, hey, spirit of the game. And so every game has rules. I still remember playing Trivial Pursuit as a family. Do you remember playing that? I think some of the most heated arguments at all growing up were probably around Monopoly and Trivial Pursuit. I know your family played Trivial Pursuit a lot. Isn't that right, Melissa? Well, so just imagine a Trivial Pursuit game. It was about table tennis. And it was, what was the color of the official, you know, the playing uniforms when a person played? And so the team was trying to decide, it's for the win. It's a final round. And you've got to come up with the color that was the official color that people could play then with table tennis. And you're figuring, oh, it's either black or brown, what would it be, black or brown? And so you just have this debate on your team, and you finally say, okay, we're going to go with black. It's probably black. They have to have black on, so the contrast of the ball, you know, you could see it easily. And so the opposing team reads the answer from the card. The official color for those playing table tennis is dark. And the person ruled the answer black out of order. What? Decades of family arguments ensued. No more Christmas gifts. You know, to total chaos in the family. Because with the answer dark, and to say that black or even brown wasn't an appropriate answer is not getting into the spirit of the game. It's technically, dark, D-A-R-K, black, B-L-A-C-K, I can see these words are different, but it was the right answer. They were not playing according to the spirit of the game. Frisbee is played according to the spirit of the game. You know, Jesus was engaged with lots of games too. The Pharisees, in this very passage, not unusually, it's rather typical of the religious leaders of the time, they were always trying to get one up on Jesus. Now, why is that? Do you think Jesus woke up in the morning and said to himself, I wonder how I can really put those Pharisees down today? I really want to make them feel awful. That's what I want to do. No, he probably didn't. But the Pharisees woke up every day, now that Jesus was in town, saying, I wonder what Jesus is going to do to mess up our nice system that we have in place. I wonder how Jesus is going to tip the boat so that we begin to capsize. How are we going to keep Jesus in his place? So our gospel lesson has the Pharisees showing up to Jesus and putting him to the test, trying to trap him in an answer, asking a question that was no win. Maybe like that black and brown in the Trivial Pursuit game. And so they ask him, is it lawful for a man to divorce his wife? And Jesus asks, what does Moses say? And so they reply back, who knows the laws of Moses better than the Pharisees? And so they quote back, you know, what the rules were. And Jesus says, well, that was done, you see, and who would know more about what went on back in Moses' time than Jesus, the eternal one? And so he says, no, actually back then, and by the way, I know what went on back then. Actually back then, it was because of your hard-heartedness that Moses made all of these special rules. And actually, divorce in Jesus' time, and as we read this passage, it may be easy for us in our heads just to sort of lift up the words and take them out of, say, the year 30 AD and drop them into 2018. Divorce and marriage today is not the same as it was when Jesus was walking around. And here's what made it different. It had to do with the spirit of the game. Jesus said it was because of your hard-heartedness that Moses came up with some rules for marriage and divorce. But Jesus says that's not the spirit of the game. Because in Jesus' day, women were just chattel. They were just public property. And so when somebody became a bride to a groom, that was just another piece of property. And we know even in this country that women didn't even have the right to vote for many, many decades, years after the nation was founded. So there is an unjust gender gap when it comes to our patriarchal world. And back in Jesus' day, it was even worse than all of our conversations, whether we're talking about Supreme Court nominees, or whether we're talking about what goes on in business, or even our issues around privacy with Facebook and Google and all the rest, that all the concerns could go way back, and it has to do with how we treat people according to the spirit of the game. So in Jesus' day, women were property, and the more women you had, the richer you were. Now, by Jesus' time, one man, one wife was mostly common for economic reasons. But a man could actually marry a woman, be given a woman in marriage from the father, And if she displeased him in any way, could just send her off. That's what it means to divorce. You say, nope, no longer. And now this woman who came with a dowry because they had no rights of their own, that the father would provide a dowry along with the bride, and now that the woman has been cast off for whatever reason, it could have been a million different things, that now the woman is not only sent out from the home, but she's sent out penniless, and the husband keeps the dowry. So now the woman has no technical father to go back to and has no husband to go back to. It was a totally unjust, awful way, a total disrespect of women and their place in God's original order, which is why Jesus reminds them about as it was in the beginning, male and female created equally, and that there isn't to be any disrespect or disrepute or any bad behavior according treating one another differently. So Jesus was being asked, what are the rules that you think are good to allow a man just to discard the wife whenever he wants? Jesus did not enter that argument. Jesus said, let's talk about the spirit of the game. The spirit of the game is that women are just as valuable as men, and they must be treated with dignity and respect. And no man, no woman has the right to discard another person that they've been joined to. That's just not how you treat people. So modern days, divorce has become more civilized, more respectful, when there's differences of opinion or differences of whatever category, that there are appropriate ways to show dignity and respect within our legal system. But that was not the circumstances when Jesus was walking around here. That back then, men could just discard women with no notice at all. And this totally wreaked havoc on the economies of families and towns just all over the place. Jesus was inviting us to pay attention to the spirit of the game. Our Old Testament reading about Job, if you could pick anybody not to be in the Bible, I imagine the first person you might pick perhaps could be a Judas, maybe, or maybe one of Peter's bad moments. Oh my gosh, I hope I'm never as foolish as Peter. Well, guess what? We're just like Judas and Peter in one degree or another. But the one person we totally don't want to pick about a life experience would be Job. Job, the entire book, the entire long book, and it's an ancient, ancient story. In fact, it was written before the Pentateuch, the Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy. It's an older book. The poetry books are older than Genesis written down. And so this Job story is totally ancient, ancient, ancient. And the Hebrew that it's written in is in a very, very difficult Hebrew to translate. And I remember that from Hebrew class because advanced people would read Job. You know, all the other people would read something easier. And so, but Job was just a complicated story that was about a man that had integrity. And what do we mean when we say integrity? What we could mean by that word is that the inside lines up with the outside. And that our decision making, as close as we can, and all of us fail, and all of us try just to make this alignment good. But integrity means that even under pressure, your decision making will be based upon the same values, spirit of the game, that would be when you're not under pressure. And these kind of core values just sort of, they can vary. Stressors can sometimes elevate certain parts of our thinking. There's emotionality in decisions. There's lots of ways to have some variances. But a person of integrity around the core values, they've been so internalized that even when stressors and problems occur, that they can stay mostly true to their course. Jesus would be someone who demonstrated ultimate integrity. Jesus on the cross, as we like to remind ourselves, sometimes we'll say, you know what, I don't want to forgive another person. They haven't asked for forgiveness. Well, that's difficult to do. Or why should I do something kind for someone they haven't been kind to me? That's also understandable. Totally been there, totally understand how that feeling can creep into our decision making. But when we look at Jesus, say on the cross, suffering on the cross on our behalf, turns to the person next to him and says, you are forgiven. Father, forgive them because they don't know what they're doing. That's the true spirit of the game, that Jesus came to forgive people, Did you ask for it? You might be someone that says, I didn't ask him to do that. I didn't send him there. Well, maybe you didn't, but you're forgiven anyway. Say, well, God loves you. Well, I didn't ask him to do that. Well, that may be, but he did anyway. And so integrity with Job was, is that he was a most righteous man, and Satan in the story goes to God and says, oh, Satan follows you because he won the lottery. Oh, Job, he follows you because you've blessed him with lots of cattle and children, and he has a great big farm, and he lives in a resort community in Cape May, and he just has a great life. And Satan kind of tests God and says, well, that's just because he's got all that good stuff. That's why he follows you. And God says, all right, well, if you want to demonstrate to yourself that that is not true, fine. You can go ahead and you can try to influence Job any way you want. Just don't take his life. And Satan says, okay, this will be fun. And so now he goes and brings Job every possible calamity that could possibly befall anybody on your worst day. Whatever it is you fear the most, yep, that happened to Job. And you know what? Besides the boils and the leprosy and the other kind of awful physical things that he experienced, the pain, the discomfort, and all of that, it's just awful. The worst thing that happened to him was the people around him treated him awful. They said, Job, just confess. You must have done something bad. Why would God treat you this way? There must be something wrong in your life that this has all come upon you. And they tried to kind of almost take Job off that core course of his life, the spirit of the game, to say, Job, you don't need to keep trusting in God. Look what God's done to you. Certainly you must have made a mistake. Maybe as a child, you can't remember what you did. This is all just punishment from God, because they thought that blessings came from people that earned God's favor. And they didn't know, like Job did, that the blessings come because of God's abundant grace, not because we deserve them. And so Job is a great story for us to remember that he stayed true to the path. Now, he varied some. There are a couple places in the book of Job. He said, oh my gosh, Job's going to lose it any minute now. And again, I'm telling you, his friends were just awful. He just almost went close to the edge. But at the end of the day, at the end of all his sufferings, he says, you know, I trust in God. God's going to bring me through this. I know that what I have been taught, the rules I have internalized in my life, I'm very certain about these core values. And I know it's an awful experience. I don't like boils, and I don't like my friends right now. But I do know that God is not going to abandon me. And so he sticks it out. And at the end, he receives a great blessing. And overabundance, he's rewarded 7 times over for all the things that he had prior to that, that experience. And then we have Jesus in the encounter trying to set them straight about marriage, that marriage is not just a convenience. Marriage is not a way to disrespect people. Divorce isn't a way to control people. We need to treat people with dignity and respect regardless of their gender, regardless of the relationship. That's a high standard, Jesus said, was from the very beginning. But then a couple kids noisily enter the room. Before this Gospel of Mark, you could consider as sort of the gospel of children, because children intersect Jesus' story frequently. But in this particular time, there's a bunch of kids, and the kids obviously might be a little distracting, and the disciples begin to shoo them away. Have you ever been told as a small child, out of sight, out of mind? Huh? Have you ever at a Thanksgiving dinner sat at the little kids' table? And was that table in the basement by any chance? Well, it might have been out of place. There are some churches I used to work with that had youth programs, and you would always know in a church, like a large, huge building that had the education building attached to the worship center, you would always know where the youth room was. It was the room that was furthest away from the sanctuary. It was the one that was totally out of sight and out of mind, as long as you didn't have to see them. And it's totally understandable. I totally understand that. That distractions of every age are distractions nonetheless. But in this case, the children come into the time when Jesus is actually talking to the Pharisees, trying to set them straight on the dignity of men and women in their society, trying to set them down a true course of the spirit of what it really means to live an ultimate life. And the kids come in and start distracting them so that the disciples say, kids, get away, what are you doing here? And he just sort of, they chase them away, which again is very understandable. Maybe they took usher training. And maybe they just happen to know, like, where do we take the kids? They're a little noisy. And so it could have been fine, but Jesus uses this as an example in front of this teaching moment with the Pharisees to say, how could you possibly chase the children away? Now, where do kids come from? Kids come from marriages. See, all of this entire story in the Gospel of Mark connects. It starts out with the Pharisees trying to trick Jesus into approving their varied rules, changing rules about what it takes for a man to divorce his wife and how can a woman get out of a marriage, and totally off the point of treating people with dignity and respect. And in that context, knowing that families are affected by Jesus' decision, it's totally appropriate in the story that now the children of these men and women come into the room and Jesus lifts them up on his lap and says, if someone does not believe and act with the sincerity and the openness of a child, will never enter the kingdom of heaven. That must have just blown them away. That's the spirit of the game. To lead an ultimate life. Jesus says, you know, the thief and the robber comes to steal and destroy. But I have come that you might have life in abundance. That Greek word for abundance could also be translated into the English ultimate. That Jesus has come to give us the ultimate life. And how is that measured? How do we know we're experiencing the ultimate life? Well, the ultimate life is a life of integrity, a life where we acknowledge that we are driven by core values and that God wants us not just to say, oh, you shouldn't kill people, I guess I can't kill people, but actually that value about human life so permeates your life that now at every level you apply it so that everybody is treated with dignity. And so that we take opportunity to affirm God's love for everybody and our place of receiving God's love and transmitting God's love. And the example he gives is of the little child. The sincerity, the warmth, the openness, the ever-learning, the inquisitiveness is just kind of the thing that he says, my disciples need to be more like kids. You know, we spend our whole life trying to become adults. And yes, some of us need to grow up a bit more in some areas. But you know how we grow up the most is to become like a child. And to recognize that children are taught racism. Children are taught about the value of money and what's important and what isn't. Children are taught how to treat people that come from the other side of the tracks. Children are taught what it means to be free and what it means to be in slavery. Children are taught what it means to eat healthy. Children are taught not to run down hallways and remember to keep their hands and feet to themselves. Children are taught these things, but as adults, we need to remember, like a child, to internalize these things. And to know that our life is really more like frisbee than it is football. You're not going to have a referee that blows a whistle every time you get off the mark, every time you just get frustrated in doing the right thing. That we need to ask God's Spirit, in the spirit of the game, to lead the ultimate life, that the Spirit would remind us internally to do the right thing and to live our life with consistency so that these core values permeate every part of our life. And we're not perfect. We fail all the time. The idea is that Jesus wants his disciples to so be aligned with the core values that we are able to function under stress or under blessing and still behave as Jesus' disciples. So that's what makes Frisbee such a unique game. It has lots of rules, but everybody is responsible to follow the rules and to keep the spirit of the game. In your life today, what is the spirit of the game that God wants you to work on this week? That we could get over the technical pieces and the whether dark is really black or brown or whether dark is dark, to find ways of honoring men and women and children to, in our own life, show dignity and respect. In what ways is the spirit of the game something God can work on with us this week? Let us pray.